Good evening, everybody. Glad to see you here. Welcome to all those who are streaming from home as well. We're going to be in Genesis. We'll start around chapter 37, if you want to be turning there. One of the challenges, I think, as we think about these stories that we know so well, as I talk about Joseph tonight, I wrestled with what exactly, this amazing, great story, and what exactly do we talk about? Do you focus on it all? Do you narrow in? And I think, you know, sometimes we might say, well, everybody knows this, and that's not necessarily the case. Every generation has to learn these stories, and we come back to these stories over and over, and there's always something new that we take in. And if you've ever read scripture with somebody who's never read it before, they bring questions to your mind that you probably have never thought of because we just gloss over some of those details. I remember one time in class that I was talking about David and Bathsheba, and this student said, wait, what? They had never heard the story before. And she was paying attention that day of this new story that she had heard. So again, even all the way down to the youngest, I know that, you know, Eden and their classes, the four-year-olds through Miss Kim, have been talking about Joseph. I think they've just moved on from that. So we've talked a lot about Joseph recently. And as I thought about this story, one that we're familiar with, I wanted us to approach it by thinking through the eyes of those he interacted with. And that maybe that will bring us a little bit of insight this evening. And I'm going to walk through the story a little bit, again, starting on 37. And maybe you had a chance to kind of look over this a little bit today, but again, a lot of these things may be familiar to many of us. But I want to divide this up and really look at his journey to Egypt and time in Egypt, and then the second half, look at the reconciliation or the reunion with his family. In the first part, I think about, all right, let's think about what Joseph was like through the eyes of folks. Well, first off, according to Jacob, right, he was his favorite. Jacob's favoritism caused problems not only for his wives, but also his children. So he's the favorite. And his brothers, well, through the eyes of his brothers, the brothers hated him. They couldn't stand him, not just for the coat, but for his dreams that come up, these two dreams. Now, we know that he's 17 at this time. It was interesting, even in verse 2, where it says, Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. And it goes on to, now Israel loved him more than others and gave a coat. And I don't know if I'd ever really looked at that verse, but those brothers probably think, well, he's a big tattletale. Going and giving a bad report about him, right? So you can imagine, you know, sibling, there's challenges among siblings, just in every family. But these brothers despise him. So far that they conspire to kill him. And at least Reuben, the oldest, tries to save his life and put him in a pit, and he's going to come back later. Now, one of the things that I looked at, too, is that if Joseph's 17, Reuben's probably about 24. That span of ages pretty much goes 24, 23, 22, 21, all right, through all those siblings. And we do that because, we know that because we go back and we can see about Leah and Rachel, those 7 years. He works the first 7 years, and then Leah, and then he gets Rachel, and he has to work another 7 years. So he has a lot of children during that time. And so it would be all the way down to Asher, who's probably a year older than Joseph. And then Benjamin would probably be about 11. So a lot of times he's not really lumped in there because he would have been the younger one. Of course, Rachel died in childbirth. But as we think about this, Judah, if you go to chapter 37, verse 26, then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers listened to him. I've always taken that as a negative connotation. Like, he's like, hey, we might as well make some, like, money instead of killing him. Like, he is our brother, like, let's sell him. A few places I look sometimes have a little bit of a more positive twist of, like, well, at least he's trying to save from death. I still lean towards the more negative view, but it's going to come back up later, much later on in life, where we see the role that Judah will play. So again, the favorite of his father, despised by his brothers. According to Potiphar, he's just some slave boy that he gets. But he quickly notices some things about him and that God is with him. And so really for Potiphar, he's not just a slave, but he sees that God was with him and caused all these things that he did to succeed. And so he puts Joseph in charge of everything that he had. Now, Joseph was also, we're told, handsome in form and appearance. And so Potiphar's wife had her eye on him, and she wanted him. And she tried day after day to seduce him. And he continues to refuse her advances, so eventually she falsely accuses him. According to the prison keeper, well, he's a great thing, a great prisoner to have, because again, what happens? Everything succeeds under him, and he puts him in charge, basically, of the prison. Then, of course, we have the encounter with the cupbearer and the baker. Right? So, for the cupbearer, the chief cupbearer, Joseph is a great source of news. Talk about making your day. All right? They have these dreams, and Joseph says, if God reveals dreams, like, tell them to me. So he has the dream about the three branches and vines. And Joseph says, you're about to be restored to Pharaoh. So that's the best news he could have gotten. So you can imagine the chief baker's like, ooh, pick me, tell me my dream. It's not the same result. It's a great source of sorrow and disappointment that he is going to be hanged by Pharaoh. Notice in chapter 40, verses 14 and 15, after he tells the cupbearer his dream, he only asks him one thing. Chapter 40, verse 14, only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit.
So again, sometimes we might say, oh, like, you know, God was with Joseph, and so Joseph's in charge of the prison. Yeah, but don't miss the fact that he's still in prison. He doesn't have that freedom. Oh, you know, he gets put in the head of Potiphar's house. Yes, he does. But he's not free to do as he wishes.
He's owned by Potiphar. He's in prison here. And it takes 2 years. 2 years, right? Imagine, like, if this guy's going to be restored in 3 days, you think, all right, he's going to mention this to Pharaoh,
because that seems a rather significant detail that you think could be mentioned. But it's 2 years later that Pharaoh has his dreams about the fat calves and the skinny calves and the
corn and the skinny corn, ears of grain. And so then the cupbearer is like, it triggers, he remembers. So according to Pharaoh, Joseph is this guy who's been in prison, and he can interpret dreams, and there's nobody like him. And he not only interprets his dreams, but he devises a plan, gives Pharaoh advice of here's what you ought to do, of how to survive the famine, to store up during the years of plenty. And so Pharaoh puts him in charge.
Now again, think about this. If he's 17 when he's sold into slavery, when his brothers sell him, he's 30 when he enters the time service of Pharaoh. It's about 13 years there. We don't know how long he was in prison. At least 2 years, we know that much. Some traditional Jewish sources will say 10 years, but he's got 13 years, right? I mean, his last of his teenage years and his whole 20s. Imagine that, guys, right? It'd be a bit of a bummer. And so what we see here is he enters into this service of Pharaoh, and then when Pharaoh gives him his daughter to be married, we see in chapter 41, verses 52 and 53, I think we get maybe a little bit of insight into Joseph's thoughts.
Because in verse 51, Joseph called the name, this is chapter 41, verse 51, Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. As we think about the story of Joseph,
that the title tonight is Consistency in Chaos.
What's the chaos part of this?
Well, his life is a series of ups and downs, and even the ups are still downs because, you know, he's in Potiphar's house and in
jail, in prison. He's betrayed by his brothers.
I mean, can you imagine, like, it would be enough of one, but here all his brothers, of what they're doing, to want to betray him.
He's almost murdered. He's thrown into a pit. He's sold as a slave. Then he ends up in Potiphar's household. And you might think, all right, things are going good. And then he's done nothing wrong. In fact, he's doing the right thing, and yet he gets thrown in prison for doing the right thing. He's not at fault in any way. And you see that when he's talking to the cupbearer, right? He's like, please remember me
right? I want to get out of this place. And I was taken from my homeland.
He ends up in prison, and then he ends up in charge of Egypt. As we think about this, there's a few things that stand out. It's often pointed out, but I want to point it out again tonight, in case somebody's not heard it before. But in chapter 39, verse 2, when he's in Potiphar's house, we see chapter 39, verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. If you go on just a little bit further, after, once he's thrown in prison, verse 21, he's thrown into prison, but 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Again, think about this. We see the whole story. But imagine if you were going through this, how you would feel. And yet it's described as what? God's steadfast love was with him. We've been talking about, you know, we have these heroes of faith, and we often refer to them as heroes of faith, but we need to be reminded that they were human like you and I. And if you look closely, you start to see all of their flaws as well. And yet God is able to do amazing things and accomplish his plans through flawed individuals. When he is brought towards Pharaoh in chapter 41, verse 38, he's interpreted the dreams, he's given the plan for what to do, and it pleases Pharaoh, and verse 38 says, and Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. In the chapter before, there's a verse where basically when he's called towards Pharaoh, he's like cleaning himself up, you know, getting presentable. And then by the time he leaves Pharaoh, he's going to have robes and be sent out and bowed down to. That's a big turnaround in the 24-hour period in one day. And so we see that God, that consistency in chaos, all that going on in his life, God was a constant, even in those valleys, even in being thrown in a pit and almost being murdered by your brothers, even in being falsely accused and thrown into prison. See, God was with him. But the other thing is that Joseph was consistent. Joseph was faithful. Joseph was obedient to God. I think one indication we get of that goes back to chapter 39, going again back to Potiphar's wife. Chapter 39, verse 6. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. But notice again, there's that aspect of Potiphar, but what does it boil down to? He says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her.
Again, notice this wasn't like a one-time temptation. Right? This is a constant problem that he is having to deal with.
And yet he says, how could I do this great wickedness and sin against God?
As we think about Joseph and this really amazing story, and one in which sometimes we have a hard time maybe relating because you're like, well, I wasn't thrown in a pit, and my siblings didn't try to kill me, and I'm not, you know. And so we start to see that divide and how do we relate. But if we go back, imagine, this is Joseph, a regular human being, right?
And all that he is going through. And as we think about this, I think it comes down to thinking about what can we control in our life? We have this illusion that we can control a lot, or we try to control a lot. As somebody who is a planner that likes to, right? I like to try to plan and control things. But see, that's a great illusion. Joseph had no control over really his life, but he could control himself. And he does that at each stage along his story. And so as we think about that, we can pretty much, the only thing we can really control is our own actions, ourselves. Our actions, how we respond to things. And notice again, with Joseph, Joseph is a consistent through this story, and yet what were all those perspectives that were had of Joseph? Some loved him, some hated him, and yet he's the same. To our faculty across the street, you just got your course evals back, right? Did you open those up? You're the same person, right? But those comments, is that the same person teaching? You see, we can be the same. We can't control what people think of us. But we can control ourselves and our actions and how we respond to things. You cannot control what others think of you. You cannot control what your friends or your family or your coworkers think of you. You cannot control what others do to you. Again, you cannot control what your friends or your family or your coworkers do to you. Believe it or not, you cannot control the unfolding of time. And so I think this is a reminder of what we see of the faithfulness of Joseph, but also the faithfulness of God to Joseph. And we know that God is faithful, even if we don't know what that exactly looks like. Like Joseph, when he's in, you know, in prison, we're probably not like, oh man, that guy's blessed by God. But what we see is from God was with him, God's steadfast love. And so just like Joseph, we can be consistent and faithful and obedient to God. And just like God is there for Joseph, God is there for us. It's interesting, as I thought about this, you know, the naming of his children that was given in chapter 41. And then we see, starting in chapter 42, we're going to see that Joseph has to confront his past from a visit from home, from his brothers. So his brothers come, of course, to buy food for the family because of the famine that's going on. And we see in chapter 42, verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. In fact, he accuses them of being spies. He uses an interpreter, so the brothers have no idea that is him. And initially, Joseph is only going to send one brother back. He says, "You're spies." They're like, "No, we're not." He said, "Well, then prove it. One of you needs to go get your youngest brother then, to go get Benjamin." And he throws him basically into confinement for 3 days. But then what we see, what happens in verse 18 of chapter 42, "On the third day, Joseph said to them, 'Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households.'" You see, just before he had said in verse 15, "By this you shall be tested, by the life of Pharaoh. You shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother." So 3 days later, he sends all the others, but he's going to keep Simeon there. And so, of course, his brothers see all this as punishment. If you thought about this, they have been keeping this secret about Joseph. And again, they don't even know this is Joseph. But think about this secret they have been keeping for like 20-ish years, right? Because Joseph was 17. He's entered in the time when he's Pharaoh is 30. There's been the 7 years of bountiful years. So he's about 37. And then this is, I think, year one or two into the famine. All right? They've kept this secret. And you can see here in verse 22 of chapter 42, "And Reuben answered..." Oh, no, back up one verse, verse 21. "Then they said to one another, 'In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul, when he begged us, and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us.'" You know, we read these things, and if we don't think about human beings going through this, again, we have this idea here. It wasn't mentioned in the previous chapter, but this idea of Joseph begging his brothers. Imagine they're hauling him out of that pit, and he's like, "No, why, please, no." Can you imagine what would be going on there to be betrayed in that way? "And Reuben answered them, 'Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood.' They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and wept." Again, what is it when they are facing affliction? What comes to mind? What we did. And that was a long time ago. Well, they end up basically, they
Joseph sends them back with the food. He puts the money back in the sack. And of course, they're worried about that. I've got to skip over some details here for the sake of time. But basically, the brothers return and they tell their father what's going on. We got to take Benjamin if we want to get Simeon. And Jacob's like, no, we're not taking Benjamin. I've already lost Joseph. You're not taking Benjamin. Even though Reuben tries. But eventually they run out of food. And when they run out of food, Jacob reluctantly agrees to let Benjamin go. And Judah, remember the one that had the idea of selling Joseph, Judah puts his life on the line for Benjamin's safety. And this time they take double the money, because that could be a problem too if they think something happened with the money. Again, they don't know what Joseph did in that regard. And so we go over to chapter 43. And Joseph sees them coming. In 43, verse 16, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready for the men are to dine with me at noon. And so Joseph hosts a dinner. And Joseph finally sees Benjamin in verse 29. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep.
Again, Benjamin is his brother. They both had the same mother, right? And if he was like 11, when he's sold off, when he's 17, and so what? This is Joseph's like late 30s, Benjamin's early 30s.
And he sees and he's caught up again in emotion. And then we see this dinner party with the seating arrangements. They serve the food, verse 32, they serve him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement.
Why? Because he knows the exact birth order. And again, think about all these guys. They're about a year apart, you know, sequential there. That the older you get, sometimes the harder it is to tell the differences. And so they're amazed by this. And you imagine it could have been a little awkward, but we do see verse 34, and they drank and were merry with him.
So they have this dinner, and then he sends them away with the food. He fills the men's sack with food is how chapter 44 starts. But what he does is he puts his silver cup in the sack of Benjamin's sack. And so he sends them on their way, but then he's going to entrap them and say, hey, why did you do this to me, right? So there's this whole back and forth. And basically, they say, we didn't steal your cup. They've got all the money again. We brought double money to pay you. It's like all these errors that they're trying to clear up. And they don't realize that Joseph is behind all of this. And notice in verse 9, he says, whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be my Lord's servants. That's the brother speaking. All right, because we don't have it. So whoever has it, they're yours. And then lo and behold, it's in Benjamin's. If there's any son that needs to get back from this trip, it's Benjamin. And this is where we see that Judah ends up begging for Benjamin's life. In fact, you know what's interesting, and in verse 17, that Joseph says to them, no, y'all don't all have to stay, just Benjamin. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father. Like, they're free to go. But what do we see that Judah responds? Judah talks to him. And we come in the middle of that conversation in verse 30. Now, therefore, as soon as I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die, and your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father.
Okay, so as I was thinking about this and reading the story and thinking about what to talk about, again, those kinds of questions that we gloss over sometimes because we're familiar with the story, have you ever stopped to wonder, why all the shenanigans, right, of Joseph? Like this back and forth, it seems like a little manipulative, maybe. I mean, it just, again, a superficial reading here.
Why does he accuse them of being spies?
All right, so let me tell you my opinion, and I could be totally wrong in this, okay? All right?
But as I was thinking through this, because later, of course, we see with the whole cup thing, I mean, the category or the section is called, like, Joseph tests his brothers,
right? And that's all we get in that regard. But think about this. Why is he accusing them to be spies? He recognizes his brothers. He's confronted with his past that he thought was closed. Well, if he accuses them of being spies, what can he do? He can gather a lot of information. We see he's asking about the brother, he's asking about the father, and so he's gathering that information. In fact, when the brothers go back, and Jacob's like, why did you like tell him? And they're like, well, he asked us all these questions.
And so I think to gather more information, he wants to know about his father and if his youngest brother is still alive. And as I thought about this, again, this is just merely my opinion, but I thought, as I'm trying to relate to Joseph, taking the story that we know, but relate as a human being, imagine that you've been separated for that long. Do you really want to be probably like, oh, I'm so happy to see you with all the brothers that like tried to murder you, and then they're like, oh, we'll sell them instead? There's probably some issues and some baggage there, but who does he have warm feelings to? Benjamin, right? Benjamin, his baby brother, the only brother that he has warm feelings for. In fact, we're told that he like warmed at the seeing of him. I think maybe that Joseph is working through that healing process of family trauma. Because remember what happened when he first gets the brothers, accused them of being spies, he keeps all of them. He said, I'm only going to send one. And 3 days later, what does he say? He says, here's what we're going to do, right? Because I fear the Lord, right? And he's going to send the brothers back but keep Simeon, because he still wants that ransom, because he wants to be reunited with his brother. I think he also wants to be reunited with his father as well. But think about that.
Then the second visit, when they come back, again, think about the passage of time that Joseph's had. I mean, maybe a year is too long. The journey was probably about 200 miles. Again, depending how long it would take to do that, how long the food lasted them, right? We know that they end up moving up the second year. So it's maybe as long as a year, possibly as short as a few months. But imagine that Joseph has all this stuff stirred up in him, and that's a lot of time to contemplate and think about that.
And so not only does he have this to mull over, but he also has his dreams. Because when he sees his brothers, it's mentioned that he remembers those dreams. The bowing down, and he had two dreams with that basic theme. And so when they come back, he sees Benjamin. And again, I don't know what that dinner was like, right? But we see where they said they drank and they were merry with him. And then the whole silver cup thing, again, if I'm right in this, and I don't know, just my opinion, but thinking that really he's after Benjamin, that's the relationship that he wants. That's the relationship that has good feelings attached to it. But then we see, when does this like dam of emotions break? Okay, that breaks in chapter 45. Then Joseph could not control himself. This is after Judah is saying like, let me take his place. And all that emotion just bursts forth. Then Joseph, chapter 45, could not control himself before all those who stood by them. And he sends them all away, right? And I mean, people can hear him sobbing and crying. But his brothers are there in verse 3. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Right? Joseph's had time to process all this. And there on the second time, all these weird things have happened. And he's had an interpreter the whole time. And now is the big reveal. But we see what I think is amazing about Joseph is we see the response and the perspective that he has. Again, I may be wrong that it was really initially Benjamin, but I think if it were me, right, it's like that's the relationship that you want. But we see that Joseph fears God and he has some time here. And then when Judah, basically the guy who sold him, is now willing to give his life and trade a Benjamin, his brothers, it's almost like maybe a growth there in Judah, a change in Judah. And we see here, he says in verse 5, Verse 4, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourself because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. Now, again, this is where we see amazing faithfulness there of his perspective, right? To be able to come to that place. But again, he's had some time, and think about it. He's interpreted the cupbearer's dreams and the baker's dreams and Pharaoh's dreams. He says them. He's reminded of their dreams. That, again, I could be totally wrong about the psychological process of Joseph, because that's not recorded for us in Scripture. Right? I could be totally wrong there, but what we see, the important point, is where we see where he is here. That perspective that he is able to have. And so, imagine Jacob's reaction when they tell the father, right? He can't believe it. Verse 25 says, so they went up out of Egypt, came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob, and they told him, Joseph is still alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them.
Thought he'd been dead this whole time. Again, imagine the release of guilt of the secret finally being told that they've kept buried for 20 years. And to know how it's all playing out. And so what we see in the rest of the story, the whole family moves to Goshen, the best of Egypt. Joseph solidifies the power of Pharaoh in the whole land. And his father comes. He's in the land for about 17 years. So what we have is that Jacob ends up dying. Joseph would be mid-50s about this time. And again, think about this. From when they moved there, another 17 years have passed. And how do the brothers still feel? There's still some concern there. Notice in chapter 50, verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. Again, but this powerful passage, which we love as Genesis comes to an end, Joseph said, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them.
Again, a powerful place to be, to have that perspective.
And so here's the thing we want to go back to. Are any of you going to end up ruling a nation?
I don't think so. If you have aspiration to be president, God bless you. We need a good, Christian president would be wonderful, right? But I don't know that that's going to happen. Somebody prove me wrong, that's fine. But I don't think any of us are expecting to rule a nation. And so again, there's that divide of how do we relate. But here's the thing. You may not rule a nation, but we can trust in God regardless of what's happening in our lives, through the good and the bad, when we're mistreated, when something happens, when our health, being thought of poorly, being treated terribly by family or friends, we can trust in God regardless of what is happening. And second, we can control ourselves. We can resist temptation and remain loyal and obedient to God. We can practice forgiveness to those that betray us.
It's real easy to talk about until you've really been harmed in a way. It's simple in theory, very complex in reality.
But yet we can see Joseph in this tremendous way of forgiveness. We can practice forgiveness to those who betray us. And instead of living as a victim, Joseph could have lived as a victim with a grudge, but he became stronger in character, relying on God. That's why I imagine he could come to that place where he did with his brothers. And again, to realize that God is working to greater ends in our lives, that there's much larger things than just ourselves. It's not about just being blessed so I have a good life and feel comfortable, that free of suffering. No, this is, God is working the life of Joseph, but also the grand narrative, this grand narrative and story of salvation that's going to unfold, that this is how he's bringing the Israelites down to Egypt to thrive and survive. Now, again, they're going to suffer, will come later as a people, and then God will deliver them again. Again, the unfolding, as we look at the time of the judges and the ups and the downs, you see, there's not only our individual perspective, but there's God's plan and bird's eye view of it all. That God is working towards the promise of a Savior through his chosen people. And yes, Joseph suffered. Joseph was falsely accused. Joseph was betrayed. But God's steadfast love was with him. And Joseph is even able to come to that perspective. You see, Joseph was blessed by God for the sake of many others.
That's something that we can take right there. Think of our blessings, not about blessings like for me, but how does God bless me to see our blessings in the same way for the sake of others?
And that Joseph, his obedience and steadfastness led to the preservation of his family and of his people. You know, there's somebody in the New Testament too, the obedience to the Father. Jesus being obedient and steadfast in his love to God, and what was accomplished through Christ to sacrifice and die for us, that through Christ's obedience to God the Father opened up a way to salvation. I know there are lots of other things could be said. I know I went a little long, but it is a powerful story. And again, to think through, put ourselves in those shoes. The next time we talk about the heroes of old, really, what is it about? It's about being faithful. And that you and I have the same opportunities to be used by God, not because we're super talented, not because we have wealth and fame, but because we can be obedient to God and God can be steadfast in his love to us. If there's anything you need, prayers, become a child of God, we can do that tonight while we stand and as we